ARUP Institute for Learning presents Insight.
Education.
Leader.
Pain. Technology.
Experiment.
Quality.
Esoteric.
Informatics.
Clinical utility.
Patient care.
Research.
Laboratory.
Excellence.
Join us as we delve into emerging topics presented by ARUP medical directors who are faculty in the Department of Pathology at the University of Utah School of Medicine. On the last segment, Golden Welch, Dr. Hopkins, and Dr. Strothman discussed patient testing, screening versus definitive testing. Today, they continue their discussion about definitive testing and how to test for different drugs.
Dr. Hopkins, could you describe why this method is better for certain analytes?
Certain drugs are metabolized extensively, and these metabolites are picked up by the immunoassay at the same time that the parent drug is picked up, or multiple metabolites at once are picked up by, because the antibodies in the assay are binding to anything that looks similar to what they're designed to attach to. So you get an additive effect of the signal, which can push the test over the positive cutoff. And this can give you a positive when the amount of drug and metabolites are low in the sample. That's something a more definitive type of testing, which is specifically designed to identify one compound, in the case of mass spec, with a specific mass to charge ratio, where you're only going to detect one metabolite or the parent drug, not together. So you don't have the benefit of that additive effect. And you may end up having something that is just below the positive cutoff for that definitive test, whereas with the immunoassay, you may get a positive result because of that summative effect, such as patient A with the buprenorphine. The glucuronide and the buprenorphine will be picked up by the immunoassay, whereas in our definitive testing, it's only going to be detecting one or the other, not both.
One thing I would add to that as well with the immunoassay testing is it's sort of built on this idea of specificity as well. So, yeah. You know, the two illustrations that Dr. Hopkins talked about with buprenorphine and THC, those are relatively high-performing immunoassays, and so they're relatively specific for the drug and the metabolites. You know, the problem comes into play where you have other immunoassays that are not as specific, and so you have a lot of cross-reactivity. Amphetamines is a really good example of an immunoassay that cross-reacts with just about everything in patient urine at times. So those have up to about a 40% false positive rate. So there's a very poor performing immunoassay. Because of that, we certainly would not want to make any decisions based upon that. But the two that Dr. Hopkins talked about, THC and buprenorphine, they actually perform relatively well. And in fact, as she kind of described, we've had cases where the buprenorphine point-of-care cup outperforms an immunoassay test, specifically because of that sort of summation effect of all the different metabolites. And one of the challenges with confirmatory testing or definitive testing by mass spectrometry is how the samples are prepared. When you have samples that have glucuronides, you can cleave those and you can lump them back in with their, you know, related metabolites. So you can take a buprenorphine glucuronide, you can hydrolyze it and make buprenorphine out of it. You know, and then all of a sudden, what was buprenorphine and buprenorphine glucuronide is now summed up into buprenorphine. So it's similar along the lines of that immunoassay idea, but at the same time, you're just increasing your ability to detect.
And so when we talk about the performance of these methods, we throw those words out like sensitivity or specificity. Cutoff levels is a common term that we use to describe the performance of the test. In our case that we had with patient A who was receiving buprenorphine and Valium, what would be the cutoff levels in this case?
Yeah, so cutoff levels are challenging. I mean, there are some regulated analytes. So SAMHSA regulates quite a few analytes. And so those are more of the classic drugs of abuse. They have what they consider to be adequate screening levels or cutoff levels for those, typically for immunoassays. And then they also give guidance for what the confirmatory testing should be. But those are, again, really geared towards workplace drug testing, where the biggest concern is false positives. So we want to minimize false positives as much as possible. So then because of that, we want to make the cutoffs a bit higher, right? And that way we don't have this low-level noise or low-level cross-reactivity giving issues. In pain management, in the clinical laboratory, we have a different context. Now we're actually trying not to necessarily look at abuse of drugs, but we're looking at compliance with drugs. So then because of that, concentrations aren't going to be as high, and so we have to have more sensitive cutoffs. And that's where immunoassays start performing not adequately, because now we're trying to get down lower where they may actually not perform as well as they should. And because of that, we may end up erring on the side of false positives, which is why we need that definitive method or a follow-up method there. So the cutoffs, for the most part, are really based upon each laboratory, and that's what makes it extremely complex for physicians as they might go from one laboratory to another. we may have a cutoff of 300 for amphetamines, another lab may have 500, another lab may use 1,000, depending upon that. The different devices, different point-of-care cups, all have different validated cutoffs at the same time. In the end, what you're getting is a positive result, and oftentimes it's easy to assume positive means positive, but it very much doesn't. And the same case goes with confirmatory methods. If one laboratory has a very sensitive instrument, a very good method, then they might have a lot lower cutoff than another laboratory that doesn't have the same sensitive instrumentation or method as well. It can vary quite a bit from lab to lab, from device to device, from instrument to instrument, and that's what really makes it so complex. And that's oftentimes why we really try to encourage any unexpected negatives. There's certainly always the issue of a cutoff. If somebody has 21 nanograms per mil and the cutoff is 25, it's going to be negative. But it doesn't mean there isn't drug there. It just means that you have to call the laboratory. And the reason we don't report that out is because we don't have confidence in the actual quantitative number that's there. But we certainly can look at the data and help a physician understand whether or not there is something there that fits with their clinical expectation.
Dr. Hopkins, are there cases where a definitive method should be used for testing exclusively?
Yes, as Dr. Strathman mentioned, the different immunoassays may have different performance related to different drug analytes. One of the cases that we have here are patient B, who's on clonazepam, is a perfect example of this. Clonazepam is so extensively metabolized that you may not find much of the parent drug at all, and its major metabolite is not picked up effectively by any immunoassay platform. In this case, if the patient is taking clonazepam and you'd like to confirm clonazepam is indeed present in the urine or the metabolite indicating use of clonazepam, it would be ideal to go straight to a definitive form of testing to confirm this and skip that all the trouble you're going to have by just getting a false negative, or it wouldn't really be a false negative because it's just not there, not being picked up, but would save yourself the trouble of the timing and everything, dealing with the patient, possibly delaying them getting their medication and all these things. So going straight to definitive testing in this case would be a good idea.
Dr. Strathman, let's talk a little bit about the types of definitive methods that we use here at ARUP.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we have the classic, what you'd expect, the screen with reflex to confirmation, and that confirmation is typically done by either gas chromatography mass spec or liquid chromatography tandem mass spectrometry. And so those are really, for the most part, considered gold standard techniques. They're highly specific. They tend to be adequately sensitive for all of the compounds or analytes that we're looking for. One of the more newer ones that we have been vetting for the clinical laboratory has been time-of-flight technology. Time-of-flight is just a different type of mass spectrometry. It has different physics, different principles behind it, but the ultimate goal is the same, a high specificity method where we can look at individual compounds instead of having to look at classes of compounds, which is what you do by immunoassay. And this has been a very nice platform for us to try to do this upfront definitive method testing that Dr. Hopkins talked about, primarily because there is precedent for saying my patient's on clonazepam. We know the immunoassays don't cross-react well with the metabolite that's present in the urine. So let's just go straight to a definitive method like tandem mass spectrometry. Downside to an approach like that is the definitive method typically is only going to be for a specific class of drugs, and so it may be just for benzodiazepines. So the downside to that is if you do have a high-risk patient who also happens to be on clonazepam, well, we still want the other drugs of abuse there as well. So then the question is, do we have a physician order the screen, knowing that the screen is going to fail, most likely for the drugs they're taking, but because we want to have all those other drugs of abuse, or is there a better way that we can do this? And so, you know, what we have done here is we've designed an immunoassay hybrid with time-of-flight mass spectrometry, with the idea is we use high-performing immunoassays or immunoassays with a relatively low positivity rate. We couple those to time-of-flight, and time-of-flight is used for the compound classes where immunoassays are very challenged. So opiates is one where the immunoassays oftentimes are not very informative. Could be anything from morphine to heroin use, and we certainly need to be able to differentiate between those two. Benzodiazepines is another good example, where here we have the potential for a false negative by an immunoassay, so we want to be able to do those by a definitive method up front. And so all of that comes together then to give you an ability to sort of do a wide panel screen to be able to look for all the drugs of abuse that you might be concerned with, but to also be able to zero in on the compounds that an individual is most likely taking. So that way we don't have to worry about false negatives or false positives. We get sort of the complete picture at the very first step.
On the next segment,
we hear the terms qualitative and quantitative testing, especially in the field of pain management. We discussed a little bit about the different methods, more definitive and immunoassay screen. If we could talk a little bit about that and the differences between a quantitative and qualitative.